There are two ways that I think brings you closer to self-realization. Of course, we're already self-realized. And we don't have to come closer, we just have to remove the cloud that tells us we're human. But there are two methods that I think through the years of understanding that brings you very close to self-realization. One is satsang, which we're doing now, and the other one is practicing all the things we learn at home. Now, satsang is a very sacred teaching. If you come to satsang, you pick up the power that goes with it. With us, it's a direct lineage to Ramana Maharshi. So what this means in satsang, we are all actually Ramana Maharshi. Every one of us. There's no difference. And we are all each other. This means we all have the knowledge we need. And as we keep coming to satsang, it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. In the beginning, when you first hear this, it sounds strange. But it's not so strange. If you're studying to become a doctor, you associate with doctors, and it sort of rubs off, and you feel the vibration. If you're studying to be a lawyer, you associate with lawyers, and the vibration sort of rubs off, and you always feel legal. So when you come to satsang, there's a direct lineage with the founder, or the rediscoverer, I should say, of Advaita Vedanta, who is Ramana Maharshi. So in any event, we should all feel something deep within our hearts and allow it to bloom by itself without forcing it. And this happens just by attending satsang. As you attend satsang, you become a sweet person. By sweet, I mean you give up all of the anger, the tantrums, the doubts, the suspicions. You stop worrying, and you begin to unfold like a flower with its calyx towards the sun. You just open up. You start feeling good for no reason. You notice that things stop bothering you. You're no longer concerned. I don't mean you don't care. You're very compassionate. But I mean you understand the nature of the world. That it's Maya. It's transitory. Nothing is ever the same in the world. So the world ceases to excite you one way or the other. The world no longer makes you too happy nor too sad. It becomes impersonal to an extent. But you still do your work. your body does whatever it came here to do. Yet you're always in heaven, mentally. Now, if you can't come to satsang, or you don't feel that kind of devotion, then you practice diligently the lessons, the teachings of Advaita Vedanta. And then you will find the same things happening to you in a little different way. But you will also unfold. It's wonderful if you can do them both. But those are the two ways that will bring you closer to realization. You subsequently have to ask yourself, what am I doing with my life? And what direction am I going? And look at your life, analyze it. From the moment you get out of bed until you go back to bed again at night, what are you doing with the hours that you're awake? Do you waste your time? What do you do? You have to remember you only have so many years to live in this world. And then you'll just vanish if you don't know who you are. You will repeat the lessons over and over again. And you'll have many opportunities to understand and discover your true nature. But the wise person begins the discovery immediately. It's like digging for gold. You can talk about the gold. You can just make a couple of holes with a shovel and say, I'll come back next month. Or you can really get into it and get a pickaxe and start chopping away until you discover the gold and dig it up the same day. The choice is always yours. There's a story about a beautiful tree. A large, beautiful tree. And on the lower branch, there lived a little bird. And the bird used to hop from branch to branch. Tremendous tree. It would eat sweet berries. And it would sing and whistle. And was very happy. And then it would hop on another branch. And there were sour berries. It would get upset, stop singing, till it found sweet berries again. And this went on for years. Sweet berries, sour berries. It was happy when it found the sweet berries, unhappy when it found the sour berries. Isn't this like us? When we think we found something we like, we become very happy. But then when it changes, like all things must change, we become miserable. And so the bird started to think about this, and it flew around the tree. It happened to gaze way up in the top of the large tree, and it saw a majestic big bird sitting there. A translucent, shining bird that looked so happy and so radiant, doing nothing, just sitting on top of that tree in bliss. And the little bird said, oh, how I wish I could be like the big bird. Look how happy it is. It doesn't have to hop for sweet berries or look for anything. It just sits there by itself, so radiant. I think I'll fly up to it and discover its secret. So it started to fly toward the big bird. But a quarter up the tree, it saw some beautiful red berries. And it stopped and started to eat the berries, and they were delicious. So it forgot all about the big bird. And started to sing again, was happy. Isn't this like us? We find something we like and we forget about spiritual life. And we say, this is what I want, a new Jaguar, a new house, a new companion, a new something. But then after a while we become disgusted, disillusioned. So after a while the sweet berries ran out and there were only sour berries left on the tree. And the bird again became disillusioned. So it started to fly around the tree again. It looked way up on the top and saw the translucent, radiant bird sitting there once again. So majestic, so happy and blissful. And again said to itself, this time I'm going right to the top. But on the way up, halfway up the tree again, it saw some beautiful purple berries. It had not seen purple berries in years. It loved purple berries. So it stopped and started to eat of the purple berries and became very happy again. Started to sing, eating berries. And again, it's like us. We find a new companion. We get a new toy. We move to a new state. Whatever we do, we think that's it. Now I'm going to be real happy. But soon the berries were gone. And again it was left with sour berries. So it flew around the tree and saw the big bird again. And it said, this time I'm going straight to it and nothing is going to stop me, nothing. It resolutely made up its mind. So it started to fly up. But again, three quarters up the tree, it saw some orange berries. And it loved orange berries. So it had to stop and start to partake of the orange berries. And again, forgot about the big bird. And went on for months and months eating the berries until they were gone. And only the sour berries were left. And again, that's like us. We say we're resolutely going to go after spiritual life. And that's where we're going, that's where we're headed. But then something happens. We discover some good humanhood, something we like, and we say, the heck with the spiritual life. I'm going after this instead. So we do that until we become disillusioned and we get tired of it. Again, the birds saw sour berries and it got sad and upset. It flew around the tree again. And this time it said, nothing is going to stop me. I'm going right to that big bird and find out who it really is. Nothing will stop me. And it flew right toward the big bird. It skipped all the berries, it saw all kinds of berries on the way, it didn't care anymore. But it went right to the big bird. As it got closer and closer, the big bird shone brighter and brighter and brighter. Until the light was unbearable. And a little bird landed right where the big bird was. And you know what it discovered? It was the big bird all the time. And that's like us, isn't it? We talk about God as far away. But we have no time because we've got to do our work. We've got to do our material work, that is. We talk about God being too far, but we're going towards God until we resolutely make up our mind to be on the spiritual path. And then we discover something interesting. We discover that we've been God all the time. That we are the only God there is. That we are the absolute reality. that we are pure intelligence, infinite wisdom. We discover that there's only one life, and that life is absolute reality. Satchitananda, Parabrahman, and we're at peace. Therefore, the choice is always yours. And what direction do you want to go? And I know sometimes it's hard. Some people have been on a spiritual path for many, many years. 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And they believe that I've not gotten anywhere. But that isn't true. It appears that way. But remember, if you don't make it in this life, you'll make it after. But if you're on a spiritual path, you're gaining credits. You're accruing good merit to yourself. You can't help it. The worst thing you can ever do is to judge yourself. Never judge yourself. Don't even look at yourself too much. Realize your divine nature. And do not allow your problems to get to you. Understand that you are not your problems. You are not the body. You are not the thoughts or the mind. And begin by controlling your thoughts. Do not allow your thoughts to become greater than you. No matter what your thoughts tell you, don't listen. Remember, your thoughts are not your friend. Your thoughts try to confound you, confuse you. And they will tell you all kinds of things. Do not listen to your thoughts. Even your good thoughts. Transcend everything. Go beyond your thoughts. To your bliss. To your joy and to your happiness. Your thoughts will take you away from this. It will make you think all sorts of things. But if you realize that your mind is a trickster, you will not allow your thoughts to convey any message to you at all. As soon as the thoughts start to come, you ask yourself the question, to whom comes these thoughts? And they'll stop. They come to me? Well, who's this me? Who is me? I am me. Well, who am I? And you begin to search for the source of the I. As you search, everything in your life begins to improve. As you search diligently, things improve because you're no longer reacting the same way to situations. Your reaction has become different. The situations may be the same. As an example, when you hear about the Iraq-United States confrontation, before you become disturbed, you're thinking of a war, and you're thinking of man's inhumanity to man, and you're worried about inflation and recession in the United States, and all these things used to worry you. But as you advance spiritually, you realize that this is the way of the world. The world has always been like this. And you see it differently. You begin to see love, compassion. So the world hasn't really changed, you've changed. You see the situation completely differently. You realize that all this is the self, and I am that. In other words, what you realize is the first principle. Everything is a projection of your mind. Whatever you see is a projection of your mind. Therefore, if you see something that's not right with another person, you're seeing yourself, aren't you? If you're seeing another person who's troubled, or another person who has problems, or if you're seeing anything wrong, doubts, apprehensions, suspicions, you have to remember that you have to have those qualities in order to be able to see them in another person. So as you grow, you start seeing through those things. And when anybody else does, it no longer disturbs you. And if it no longer disturbs you, that negative vibration cannot come near you. And you're at peace. Any questions about that?
When you say not to judge yourself, is that because you would be judging the ego, which isn't real?
Certainly, exactly. Because you're always judging your experience, your outer experience. And you can't judge that because that doesn't even exist.
Is that why you say, I think in the past you've said something like, to judge yourself or condemn yourself is blasphemy?
Yes.
Because you're talking about, in that case, the real self, right?
What you're doing is you're denying the real self. It's like saying that God is no good.
Mm.
So you're saying there's something wrong with you. And there's not. It's only temporary, it only appears that way. It's an appearance.
So even though you're judging the little self, as it were,
yes,
that's blasphemous to
yes, real. Because you are no real self. It's all an illusion. It's like the snake in the rope. You think in the dark, you're stepping on the snake, but it's only a rope. It's a mistake. It's error. Therefore, you do not judge yourself. You do not judge anyone else. You leave the world alone. But you're happy and you're blissful. And you help others. Because that's your nature to do so.
That reminds me of one of my favorite Maharshi's stories, because he talks about realization being, he said it's like watching the trick of what looks to be the snake, but it's really a rope. And he said, once you've seen the rope, you can never see the snake again.
Mm.
It's like any magic trick. Once you've seen how it works, you can't even see it again.
Mm, that's right.
And I think he was at the time talking about how once you realize it's impossible to become unrealized, you'll never see that.
You have to have patience with yourself. That's another thing to remember. It doesn't appear that most of us become perfect overnight. So don't concern yourself if you make a mistake.
So another thing that you were saying too is that if we judge others, we will frame their vibrations to us. In other words, we're judging others and we see ourselves in others and the weaknesses.
And you're becoming weak also.
By judging them for that.
You become like them.
So it goes two ways then.
Yes.
Okay. And then you said it's not until you let go that you don't, then you get rid of the vibration. So you don't draw that vibration to you.
Exactly. Your mind becomes calm. Your countenance becomes peaceful. You no longer feel those so-called negative things around you.
So it's just a matter of accepting.
No, you don't accept. You become your real self. And the real self is perfect bliss. There's nothing to accept. To accept means that you're yourself, your lower self, and you're accepting something higher. But you're not to accept anything. is to be, become. I am that I am.
So you just live and let live, sort of.
Yes. But again, you have to qualify that. By live and let live, if you see somebody suffering on the road, you don't allow that person to suffer. You get down and help the person. But you don't have any thoughts about it. You just do it. It doesn't mean, again, you become calculating and cold. It means you become loving and kind. And you do whatever has to be done. But you're not involved in it mentally or physically or spiritually. Your body just does the thing it's supposed to do. And the more spiritualized you become, the more you become of service to all of humanity. You become the servant to life. It's egotistical to think that you're superior to somebody else, or you're better, or that you know and they don't. As you become realized, you have more and more humility. You become humble. And things no longer affect you. And you no longer feel hurt. So you can help anybody and everybody without qualification.
Lord, please. So the first principle in reality means everything is a projection of the self, or is the self itself?
No, the first principle is everything is a projection of your mind.
And then again,
that begins to make you understand that you are not the mind. You are the self.
By everything, you mean everything
in the world.
Material.
Everything relative is a projection of your own mind. We're not talking about the self. We're talking about the human mind.
Right. The jivas or the egoic mind.
Yes.
But ultimately, the mind also comes from the self. Course.
Yes.
But I guess the point the first principle wants to touch is that you don't get enthused with the mind creations.
No, you don't. Because you realize that everything is a result of your own mind. So why get enthused in them?
No power there.
No ego.
For the projections of the mind.
There's no power, because there's no mind.
Right.
That's why you don't get excited when you see something happening in front of you. Because you realize you're that, yourself, and you're projecting yourself. It's like you're a projector, and you're projecting a picture on the screen. So the mind is a projector, and the screen is the effect. The picture is the effect. The screen is itself. Nothing changes the screen. But the pictures change according to your mind. But the screen always remains the same. Therefore, the screen is like your real self. It never changes. The pictures are like the world, and your mind is like the projector. The projector and the mind have to be destroyed. The pictures have to be destroyed. And only the screen remains. That's the truth. Only reality remains.
And then again, everything is Brahman. That dictum.
Everything is Brahman, yes.
Including also the play of the mind.
Of course.
Ultimately.
Ultimately, there's only oneness. There's only the self. And there is no mind. And there's no play. There's no projection. That's the truth.
There is no projector, no screen.
No.
Because the mind is part of illusion. Our mind. So mm-hmm. His question was correct, that ultimately everything is also the self. That's what he was saying.
Everything reverts back to the self. Everything is the self.
And ultimately goes back
yes.
to the source.
To the source. Because what appears to be real does not really exist.
Right.
Only I am exists. Self exists, that's it. The self exists just the way you are now. You are that. What I'm trying to say is, do not separate yourself with the self. It's really a mistake to say, well, I am not the self, because the self is in me. The self is not in you. The self is you. You are that self. But for the sake of talking, you want to place the self someplace. So you say it's in my heart. When you look for it, it's in your heart. In reality, there's only the self and you don't exist at all. But when you talk about it, you place it someplace.
So you're just letting the second principle
that yes.
you're unborn and you don't exist or disappear. Exactly. But one leads to
yes.
the other, doesn't it?
It does. That's why you should practice the principles.
What I was thinking is if everything is a projection of the mind, and the mind comes out from the self, or I don't know if that's right, but let's say that the mind is a
comes out of the self.
Comes out of the self. And then again, goes back to the self.
Mm.
Isn't that the reason why this Bhaktis, they talk about that everything is Shiva or everything is the self.
Shiva and the self, God one.
So they are in wonderment and devotion to almost everything.
Yes, exactly.
Even the thoughts are seen as...
Yes, this is why I say so often, the ground upon you stand is sacred ground. We should have reverence for everything, because everything is the self.
So aren't you talking... You're talking on two different levels. When you say everything is a projection of the mind, you mean everything in the material world as we
yes.
see. When you say everything is the self, you're talking on a higher...
Everything is the self as an appearance. So we should have reverence for everything. I know it sounds complicated.
Well, it's two different levels that you're addressing.
Mm. It's really one level, but it appears like two levels. Everything is sacred. Everything.
Well, how do you, or do you react when you watch the situation Kuwait and CNN? Is it like a movie to you?
I just watch. Then I realize that's the self.
Or do you realize that it's illusion?
Same thing.
That's what I meant about the two levels.
The
great absolute, self is not illusion.
As the absolute, it's illusion, right?
Yes, but I mean it's...
The absolute is the self as the relative is solution.
Right.
Exactly.
That's good. Say that again?
As the absolute is all the self.
Yeah.
On relative level, it's illusion.
Well, that's what I meant about two levels. Mm. Although I know what you mean when there's really only one level, the ultimate truth is one level.
So when I look at something, when I look at you, or I look at a chair, or I look at a book, I see the self.
Do you see a portion of the self or all the self?
It's all the self. Everything is all the self.
It's indivisible.
It's hard to explain in words. But take this chair, for instance. When most people look at this chair, they see a chair. But I see the self as the chair. Or to put it in simple language, this is God. This chair is God.
No matter what you look at, it's God.
Yes. So you have no quarrel with anything.
I guess that would...
The looking, the actual looking is also God.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yes.
You have a good understanding.
Thing that you keep thinking of two levels, but it's like when we were saying, people say that, well, it's an illusion, therefore it's not real. But the idea is that nirvana and samsara are the same thing. So though you say there's two, nirvana and samsara, yet they're the same thing. That's where the one is. So really it's one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the unreal is different. Self is different from the manifestation, I guess. Nirvana and samsara are the same thing, so that's why wherever you look at it, you see the self.
So it seems like it's different levels of consciousness, for want of a better word.
When you have to talk about it, it appears there's multiple levels. But when you keep quiet, then it all comes to you as one. See, the more we get into the conversation, we'll go into all kinds of things and all kinds of levels.
Yeah. Because we're trying to describe the infinite with finite words.
And you can't do it.
Right. You can't intellectualize.
No, you cannot. That's why the only way is to go within yourself and discover it for yourself. But as we keep talking about, we get involved in the world.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that it's more like it's the illusion that we're separate from all this, more than that this is an illusion?
Exactly. We're not this at all.
At the same time, we're not separate from
it. We're not separate from it.
Which comes also, if I say that I don't exist in the sense of an egoic entity, everything is just as it is. Is that more or less a feeling?
Say that again.
Like if I, again, it's an imagination, but as a helper, I would say that. I don't exist, right. Yeah. I don't exist, but when I say that, I am denying the egoic or the jiva part. Then still there is something which subsists or is there.
Yourself. The self is always there.
And there is nobody to distinguish anything. Things are as they are.
Exactly. In the last analysis, you are the self just the way you are.
But not as you think you are.
As long as you're thinking relatively, you're not that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're not supposed to think.
But you are the self just the way you are naturally. And all is well. And there's nothing wrong. So you can look at it this way. The substratum of all existence is harmony. And out of harmony comes harmony. So everything is really harmonious. Except we've sort of been hypnotized and we see a different picture. It's all in the mind. The mind has betrayed us to make us believe this is black and this is white. when in reality there's no black and there's no white. It just is. You can only come to that conclusion in your own consciousness by deep self-analyzation, vichara, self-inquiry, and you'll come to that conclusion yourself. And then you will become omnipresent and you will realize that everything is the self.
Why are we here on Earth in this physical form?
You're not. You think you are.
Okay, I think I am. But why?
If you're not, then there's no answer to that.
But why? She just means that why does she think she is? Why the illusion, though? How could the self be illusioned?
There is no self and there's no illusion.
But I mean the higher self.
There is no illusion at all. You believe there's an illusion, but there is no illusion.
Why do we believe there's an illusion?
You don't.
Yeah, you do. So, ignorance does.
Ah.
None of this exists.
But I understand her question, which is, then why is there even the appearance of illusion?
To whom is there an appearance?
Me.
That's
I mean, it. The ego. Yeah, okay, is it the ego? Is that go to, yeah, your original question, okay.
And of course the ego does not exist. Do not give the ego power. Some people get hung up on the ego. And they say, yes, everything I feel is the ego, it's always the ego. And they're inflating the ego by saying that. And the ego becomes stronger and stronger.
Because the philosophy that I'm trying to wrestle with, though I know what the answer is that the philosophy is that the souls are the things that exist. That's the not the me, but the, what was that? The self that exists. You said self. So I interpret self as being the soul.
No.
No.
The soul is another part of the body. It seems that when you give up your body, there is a soul. It's just like an alter ego.
Individual soul.
Oh, so the idea of a soul and existing between lifetimes is also part of Maya.
It's the lifetime.
The illusion.
It's all Maya. All the planes of Maya, the causal planes, the mental planes, karma, none of that exists.
That was the first principle. Everything is protection of the mind. Everything.
And for somebody who doesn't know that or understand, it appears after they drop their body, they go to a different plane. And they go through all kinds of experiences. But it's still an illusion.
It must take a lot of patience for someone who has been realized to have to answer questions from people like
no, on the contrary. On the contrary.
Me, that doesn't exist.
Who has patience? There's no one there.
I know. But from the projection of my mind, my philosophies was that there was a soul which, you know, I guess according to these philosophies, the soul doesn't exist, just the self. But from the earthly, you know, ignorant plane that I'm on, I guess the ultimate question is with the human body. I mean, it seems like some people are just denying everything of the self. You can't, you know, really enjoy food. You don't enjoy anything else because the ultimate goal is just to, you know, just like the Catholics, the ultimate goal is just to be with God.
Well, you can't put it like that because the self enjoys itself.
That's why it seems like being on the, it seemed like what little I know of certain philosophies, certain Buddhist philosophies, it's kind of like for being on Earth in the human form.
That's right.
It's a crime that we're even being here in this form. We're being condemned for being here on this earthly plane, on this form, in this form.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, well, if you're here, why not smell the flowers too?
Mm.
Why not let the me, the self, use whatever vehicle it's in, whatever it's embodied in, to just feel, you know, just feel and help bring joy, at least for this physical body, and with, once again, my ignorance, you know, of not being enlightened. You know, it's like, why are you wrong for being what you are?
You're not.
Or projecting what you think you are.
You're not.
You know, because, like, everything, it's like denying, you know, food, denying, you know, enjoyment of this earthly plane.
Was it third body?
No, just talking to people, you know, people who, you know, are talking about different philosophies of Buddhism and everything else. You know,
it becomes very confusing. That's why the best thing you can do for yourself is to quiet your mind.
Yeah.
And when your mind becomes quiet, you'll become more beautiful. And you'll enjoy everything. We do not deny ourselves at all.
Yeah, because, you know, just because you know it's a movie doesn't mean you don't enjoy the movie.
True. And I, you know, I believe in enjoying, because that, to me, makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But you enjoy it in a little different way. As an example, I love to take in fresh flowers at my breakfast table. Of course, they're beautiful, right?
Acceptance is just basically letting be.
Just being yourself. That's all you have to
do. So it's the two ways, also with denial. That's also
it's beyond yeah. Accepting and rejecting. Beyond that.
Yeah.
Just be yourself.
So still the, okay. Just that you use that word denial. But so I'm taking your words of a physical, earthly interaction is projected by the mind to try to understand. Okay. That was the other.
Okay.
Too many thoughts.
So remember again that this is not a philosophy. A philosophy is usually dry words. And this is not a worthy teaching at all. We are not a philosophy at all. It's more of a realization. It's more of a quietness and emptiness. It is not a denial of anything. And there's not an acceptance of anything. It is a total emptiness, a quietness, a peace, a love, an ultimate oneness. And that's what we are. Satchitananda. That's our true nature. So when we look at something, we see joy and love and peace. We do not become ecstatic. We do not become overwhelmed. We do not become sad or angry. We just enjoy the self. at all times. And it never changes. It's always the same.
But you're always in bliss. Always.
See, I can't tell. Because I don't know what the word is.
But Satchitananda includes bliss, so
the words. But the person who's experiencing that does not know it. Because there has to be somebody to enjoy it. And if there's no one there who can enjoy it.
I didn't say enjoying bliss, I said always in bliss.
But it's a word.
That's true. I get hung up on words.
We were discussing words, so.
And it implies too, also. In, so there's something to be in something
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm. We have to talk, so we have to use words.
Sorry. Implies separation.
Yeah. As long as we're talking like this, we have to use words. But the reality is that is the Ayanis that attribute these words to the Yanis. Ramana Maharshi never said, I am in bliss. I am happy. I am filled with joy. But his disciples said that about him. He didn't know what he was.
Because it goes back to who is the I.
Who is the I, yeah.
And I think it was one of the satsangs. Bob said that the state, it's complete ignorance. That we think that the sage knows everything, but in truth, they know nothing.
Right. Is that the same as ignorance? I don't think so.
I think it was the last satsang, Robert said, if you can know it, and if you can say it, that is an end. So we're always grasping in the whole.
The thoughts and words that you said that we're using, they're just thoughts and words.
Well, it's the grasping. I mean, it's neither this nor that. It's neither accepting nor rejecting. It's not in acting or non-acting, but it's in the attachment. So it's not this or that. In fact, one can act as they please as long as they're not attached to it. But to think, well, we must accept, we must reject, it's the attachment. It's not the accepting or the rejection. So, but ultimately, the oneness, what he says, if you can say it, if you know it, that isn't it.
I was going to ask you about this thing of ignorance. Actually, we cannot fathom what really, how the Janus is. Reality. We can just talk and talk about that. Dijani tries to describe as much as he can to help us and to direct us. That. However, what I was wondering is, what about for the ones in the relative level to feign ignorance and just be silent or advocate ignorance? I mean,
a few months ago I was speaking of divine ignorance. It's okay to say I'm divinely ignorant. Uh-huh. Divinely ignorant means that we do not know what anything is. If you come to think of it, we know nothing. We don't know what a dog is, or a cat, or a tiger, or a human being, or a tree. We have no idea what it is. It just appeared on this earth at the same time we did. That's called divine ignorance. When you admit to yourself, I do not know what anything is. You see the rock. Where did it come from? Where did the first rock come from? What came first, the seed or the tree? Or the chicken or the egg? We don't know. It's a mystery. So that's the first thing we should know as spiritual beings. We should plead divine ignorance. It's your ego that tries to say, I know this, and I know that, and I know everything. But we really know nothing. We have no idea why we're here, do we? We have no idea why anything exists. Just understanding that makes us relatively happy. Because nothing is our fault. Because we don't know why it is. We have no idea why anything exists. It's later on when you work on yourself that you discover, well, nothing really exists. Everything is emptiness. Only the self exists. But until then, you give your ego a blow when you tell it, I don't know why anything exists. Because the ego wants you to know. It tells you, you want to be smart, you want to be intelligent. You don't want to be a dummy, do you? And has an answer for every question. But when you say no, I really do not know what anything is, then you're pleading divine ignorance, and that's good.
So who asks these questions that we come up with? The ego? Our egos?
You use your mind to destroy your mind.
Oh, that's right. Turning it on itself.
Yes.
By confusion or whatever.
Exactly.
So it can't be put into words what part of us inquires.
It's your mind that inquires. It inquires about itself. And the deeper it inquires, the more it disappears.
Yeah, I'm trying. I just can't seem to quite do it.
See, this is why I always tell you, try to keep your life simple. Do not make your life complicated. Don't have so many opinions about anything. Try to be still, quiet. And realize you don't know anything. Because you don't. Does anyone disagree with that?
Are you kidding? Who would say yes at this point?
And somebody can say, well, I know why this chair is here.
You said we don't know anything in the earlier satsang. You were saying, well, the only thing we know, or if there's anything we know that we think we know, what's the first principle keeping in mind, is that I exist.
Yes.
And as long as I exist, you can work on yourself because you can find out who exists through self-inquiry.
But ultimately, the I disappears.
But when you inquire, who exists? You find out that
no one. And yet I remember telling you one time I had read that Krishnamurti said the ego would never annihilate itself, and you said that was true on a relative level.
Hmm.
What do you remember what you meant by that?
Well, on a relative level it fights you very badly. It brings up all kinds of things from past lives, from this life, to confound you. But if you do not react to it, if you do not fight it, but rather inquire, to whom does it come? It becomes weaker and weaker and weaker until it's annihilated.
There's a difference between the ego and the mind, because the ego would not want to destroy itself yet, and it's the mind that is the tool.
The mind comes first. The mind creates the ego and the body.
So it's not the ego destroying itself, it's more the mind destroying the ego.
It's more the ego, it's not the mind destroying the ego. They're usually the same terms. We break them down so you understand what I mean. But there's only the mind. And everything is a projection of the mind. The ego is a projection of the mind. The body is a projection of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
The world is a projection of the mind. So when you go back to the mind and you quiet the mind, there's no ego.
You mentioned in answer to Dana's question, you mentioned past lives.
Mm.
With the word past lives, isn't there karma and soul and all of that?
Yes. But as long as you believe that, it exists. So you have to work with it.
I'm just dealing with words.
Again, on level.
I know. I'm just dealing with words.
That's why you say that it's not an illusion. It's not that everything is an illusion. Because as long as you believe it,
as long as you see it on your projector,
it's not that everything is illusion. It's that you think you're separate from everything is the illusion.
See, this is why when I make my personal confession to you, I say there's no mind, there's no self, there's no enlightenment, there's no one trying to become enlightened, there's no God, there are no others. There are no principles. There's nothing.
But you do say there is the self, and the self is all that is.
That's a word.
Are you now saying there is no self?
Who is the self?
Everything.
Yes, that's how it appears. But in the end, the self doesn't even exist. It's also a word.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we start thinking about the self, we start thinking of an entity. How else can we imagine the self? When I say there's only the self, what do you think the self is?
The oneness of all things.
And what is that?
Everything.
So there has to be one. Who is the one?
I never understood before that there was not one. I thought the self was the one.
Me.
The appearance is the one. The first appearance is the one. I. That's the one. And out of I springs everything else.
And I is an illusion. I see what you're saying. So
I versus self. Two words. It's just the all.
Even the all is not good.
We're all wrong.
Because who thinks that there's an all? Who perceives that there's an all? Who perceives that there's a self? When you're at that state, there's no one to perceive. There's nothing to perceive.
Just be.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as we're using words, there's ultimate oneness. But when the words stop, see, this is why all the practices I give you are to quiet the mind. The only thing you really have to do is to quiet your mind. What do you think self-inquiry is? It's to quiet your mind. That's all. It's the fastest thing available to quiet the mind. And when the eye disappears, the mind is quiet. Then you know. What do you know? Don't ask me. I don't know. It just feels good.
Yeah, about feeling good, Robert. When you are doing inquiry, sometimes you have a absence of thought for little.
Yes.
But then, when I realize about this absence of thought, I am really thinking.
Yes.
And then there are some other times in which there is no thought. I don't know about the absence of thought neither, but And there is a little bit of, you feel a little bit of good. I mean, feeling good. I mean, feeling like a little bit blissful.
That's the true state.
Is that the true state?
Where there are no thoughts, in between thoughts.
Right. However, they are very fast, and then you again go and
think. Yes. In the beginning, they're very fast.
Yeah. One of the last satsangs, you pointed that we should reject everything.
Mm.
And I was wondering about this and questioning about these little periods of bliss. Should I go back one rejection to?
If you can think about it, reject it.
When you are in that process of thinking it, it's time to
reject it.
Reject it. You don't care about if it comes back or not.
Exactly. You do not look for experiences. You reject them. When it comes, really, it comes by itself.
So when it starts creating a body in your mind,
reject
of its own, you, it's time to kill it.
Yeah. When it comes by itself, it comes as no thought. That's incomprehensible for human beings to understand. There's just no thought. When there's no thought, you will know.
That's what he's saying, but then his mind says, oh, I just had a moment of no thought, and that's what you reject, the thought about the no thought.
No, you reject everything.
The attachment to the pleasure, all that.
See, when you're really having that feeling, there will not be anybody left over to reject.
Mm-hmm. But isn't he getting tastes of bliss?
He's getting tastes, but it's still illusory. So he should reject it.
Why is it illusory?
Because he can think about it.
Ay, ay, ay.
See, when the real thing comes, there's nobody left to think. The thought process has been annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you live in the moment.
So the body knows what it's supposed to do.
The body will take care of itself.
And why?
The body comes under a different program.
Why is it that then, well, so on different programs, and some people just by the body's program or the existence of that self, some people will not be balanced. The spiritual and physical might not be balanced.
That's not true. In reality, when you discover who you are, the body is very balanced. And it does better work. And does whatever it's supposed to do better than ever. And you're always happy and blissful and you're feeling good. Physically. No matter how it looks to anybody else.
Otherwise it goes back to what you said. It's this entity would, you know, if it were me, the I, or whatever, I would let my body react to take care of whatever I see needs to be done and then move on.
Yes.
Without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Completely
spontaneous. Yeah. Just
exactly.
Reacting. Okay.
When I am sleeping, the self is taking care of my body, nurturing.
Yes. And you have nothing to do with it. That's how it takes care of your body when you're awakened. Same way.
We just have to listen to it, our self, so it could take care of it.
Yes.
Well, do you have to listen to something, or it just happens?
It happens.
Technically. Just I'm using words, so technically. It's
right, well, who breathes then? Is it the self, or? The mind.
The self has nothing to do with the breath. The breath is part of your ego.
So it's the mind.
the mind is breathing. And it keeps on breathing until it stops.
I thought it was the body who was breathing.
The body, the mind, the same thing. But we have to have patience. That's very important.
You know that, I guess it's a fact or legend about Dakshinamurti. He was a young 16 years old. I don't know, was he a reincarnation of Shiva? He sat and yes in silence, and he had disciples or listeners to him, older than himself, and he has sat on silence. And I think the legend says that the people who were around him got enlightened or something. Yes,
that's true. He never spoke.
Due to the to his presence, they don't mention for how long or so.
That's the story. Yes.
What does that exactly refer? Does that refer to the concept of grace, or
you can call it grace? That's what we were talking about before in the satsang. What we're doing here is we are abiding in the self, as Ramana Maharshi did. So we can say we have Ramana Maharshi's grace upon us.
Isn't that the meaning of darshan, is silent teaching?
No, not silent teaching. Darshan is a vision of light. It's a literal translation.
Oh, I thought darshan was like what you got from being in the presence of a master, even silent. I guess I've gotten my words confused.
It's the grace in the form of light, a vision of light.
What do you mean? What is grace?
Or seeing reality, so to speak.
Yes.
What is grace? What do you mean by grace?
Grace is always available. You just have to wake up to it.
But define
grace is goodness, mercy.
Helps you on a relative level.
You were talking about, or he was talking about the story that grace was bestowed in silence. And our Maharshi has said that the Guru can bestow grace by thought, by look, and by touch.
Mm.
And all of those are silent.
Excuse me, yes. I was actually referring most likely to transmission. There is that such thing as concept.
Transmission of grace.
There's such
thing
for us.
Transmission.
Did you just say?
Well, that's. Could you further explain that, though? What I just said.
Well, an enlightened person is something like a current and a voltage of a high voltage, and when you're with that person, you pick up on that voltage. So there are some physical teachers, like Ramana Maharshi, who can give you a look, or a touch, or by silence. And if you're receptive, you pick up a lot of grace and knowledge.
You're that way.
Who knows? But all those things are possible. What you have to do is make yourself a good receiver. And you make yourself a good receiver when you stop worrying and you stop getting involved too much in the world. and you start loving yourself.
Quieting the mind would make you a good receiver, right?
Yeah, same thing. When you do those things, your mind quiets.
We're talking about like a radio receiver in a way.
Yes. When you love yourself, you become quiet. You stop condemning, you stop condoning. You stop making decisions too much. You become quiet. But that doesn't mean you sit home and do nothing. It means your body will do what it's supposed to do. But your mind will be quiet.
So even what we refer to as decisions will be spontaneous reactions.
Yes. Like a tree. The tree doesn't have to think about growing fruit. By its very nature, fruit grows. The sun shines, the grass grows. The same power that takes care of that takes care of the body all by itself.
The lilies of the field, the Christ talks.
Yes. Let's play a little music.
Robert, I saw on the top of one of your sheets we had, I think it's a Yanamarga. Could you elaborate a little bit on this?
Yanamarga means the path of Yana.
Oh,
that's the name of our group.
And Yana means knowledge.
Yeah, that I knew, but I was wondering about the marga.
It means the path.
So where there would be lots of margas, right? I mean, there's...
Lots of margas. Too many.
What are some of the others? Like Yana marga, bhakti. Would there be bhakti marga?
Anything you want to say marga, you just...
Path of knowledge. Shamarga means path.
Yana means knowledge.
What about healing?
About what?
Healing. I know that it's within the self.
We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, actually. You have to ask yourself, who needs healing? Who actually needs healing? Find out it has to be healed. Healing is a funny thing. It has a lot to do with karma and the body. I find from experience, if you leave your body alone, it has the power to heal itself. The more you fall with it, the worse it gets. There's a self-healing mechanism in the body. Isn't that right away?
I believe so.
There's a self-healing in the body.
Yeah.
It knows how to take care of itself.
Every 7 years, they say the body, in all his organs and tissues, tend to renew itself.
Really?
The cells are all the...
It's a new set.
Cells.
Of course, you can help it by eating the proper foods, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But what about healers and spiritual, what they call...
I think that's all karmic.
In other words, if you're supposed to be healed, you will be, and if you're not, you will.
Yeah. Before you came into your body, you knew exactly what was going to transpire. And you know when you're going to leave your body, and when you're going to die, and when you're going to get sick, and whatever. Everything has already been planned. So if you're supposed to be healed, that's already been planned also.
It might have been planned that you would meet a healer.
Yes. Sure.
That would be karmic or not. And yes. If it didn't work, that would be karmic.
Yes.
Either way, you don't lose.
And that's right.
Yeah. There's no way to lose.
True. Well, Jesus' healings always seem to relate to a lesson. They always seem to make a point.
I think a healing without a lesson being given is useless. In fact, it's worse, I would think, for the person. They've got to learn their lesson. I don't even know if it could be done, actually.
I don't know. I just know. I always think of the woman who touched his robe and he said, "Your faith has made you whole." It wasn't. Mm-hmm. He was sort of. Not denying, exactly, but for lack of a better word, denying that he'd done anything, but her faith had done it. And that was the lesson.
He was telling us through the truth, right?
Yeah, but the lesson was that her faith made her
whole. People want to live forever, and we can't.
Just, can I read what Nisargadatta says about sure. him? Just the cover of his book.
Okay.
Rather interesting. Right. If I brought my glasses. Aha. He says, "The real does not die. The unreal never lived. Imagine a big building collapsing. Some rooms are in ruins and some are intact. But can you speak of the space as ruined or intact? It is only the structure that suffered and the people who happened to live in it. Nothing happened to the space itself. Similarly, nothing happens to life when forms break down and names are wiped out. The goldsmith melts down old jewelry to make new. Once you know that death happens to the body and not to you, you just watch your body falling off like a discarded garment. The real you is timeless and beyond birth and death. The body will survive as long as it is needed. It is not important that it should live long."
Hmm. That's good.
I love that. I keep bringing it for Arnold, hoping he'll be here because he asked to borrow it. I hope he's not still ill, but he must be. I'm going to call him and see.
Well, that's very true. Most people, especially Westerners, we try to preserve our bodies for as long as possible. Why? There's nothing wrong with dying. It's not bad. It's just another experience.
Because, I think because they fear annihilation, they think that they're
yes, of course.
It's a fear of not existing.
Of course, while you're alive, it's good to be in radiant health. So you don't have to suffer while you're living.
That's what Yogananda said. He said you can be reach enlightenment in an ill body, but it's much less distracting if you're well.
You can
reach it in an ill
body.
But it's just less distracting if you're well. It makes it more difficult to stand about, I think, if you're ill.
Is that preordained also? Right?
Everything is preordained.
I mean, your enlightenment?
Yes.
But it's not limited. It's not fixed.
It's not fixed, but it's preordained.
Well,
preordained in what way? You mean it's preordained during which lifetime you will wake up?
No, you know a lifetime before. If you have a lifetime before, that you're going to be enlightened in that lifetime.
You know it at what point? Between lives?
Between lifetimes.
And then do you remember it when it comes?
No, you don't remember it, but you find it. You do whatever you have to do.
And didn't you say that someone who reaches enlightenment usually has been approaching it for several lifetimes?
They've been practicing sadness before.
So we do get credit.
Oh, yes.
It's not like the slate is white clean.
That's why I describe it as the soul that goes from life to life. Mm-hmm. Though Robert says there's no soul.
No, but I know. But I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That entity or whatever.
See, this
there's
is
a
why
soul on a certain level. He doesn't deny it.
This is why we should get rid of all conceptions and just go and find ourselves and get rid of everything and be free once and for all.
I sure don't want to come back. I know people who act resistant to self-realization because they say they're looking forward to their other reincarnations. And
well, I don't understand.
Can't relate.
I'm sick. I'm really sick.
They think it, well, I guess they think that realization is the end of adventure or something, you know, and they look on different reincarnations as adventure, but...
Either they're sick or they're realized.
Mm-hmm. Either that or that's...
Good well, if you're realized, you wouldn't look forward to future reincarnations. You wouldn't look forward to anything.
Right. And unless you had motivation to help others.
Yeah. That puts you in a different category.
Oh, that's the Buddhist...
motivation.
Yeah, the Buddhists say that I will not be liberated until the whole world
is liberated. Yeah, me too.
Now that's a depressing thought.
more accurately is I will not take the final liberation.
Yeah.
In other words, when they're born back, they're whatever levels of enlightenment that they can reach.
That's a certain sect of Buddhism.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are other bodhisattvas who don't do that. They just there's another sect of bodhisattvas
that don't do that. What do they do?
What we're doing.
But actually, there would be a certain truth to that because you are the whole world.
Yes, but they want to stay in the relative world.
Yeah. They make a vow, actually.
Really?
But then they attain the state where they consciously know where they're going to be reborn the next life, and they may leave a letter or a note and tell someone or not. So that's an area of control that's quite different.
But to get back to health again, it really makes no difference whether you're sick or healthy in the long run. It has nothing to do with it. To remember that you are the self is more important than whether you're sick or healthy.
Because you're only sick or healthy in the dream, anyway.
Of course. Like we were discussing the other time, we have no idea of the people that Jesus healed, how many stayed healed. They could have reverted back to sickness the next day. And then I was talking about Lazarus, remember?
Mm-hmm.
When he brought back from the dead. Well, Lazarus was about 50 years old to begin with. And at that time, the lifespan was about 50. So even if you're running back from the dead, how long do you live after that?
Yeah, it makes you wonder. But again, that was, I don't remember what the point was, but all those miracles had.
To give people more faith.
Yeah. Yeah, it was less to raise him from the dead than to prove to the people that Christ was
Well,
he said he was, right?
Yes.
They say during his time there was a lot of people claiming to be Christ.
Mm.
Messiahs.
I suppose.
But here we are. What are we going to do with our lives? That's the question.
So I suppose I started to ask the question, but I think I know the answer. My question was going to be, so if you're, it's okay to look for healers, because if you look for healers, that's what you're predestined to.
Yes.
And whether they help you or not is also predestination.
Of course.
So it's neither
good or bad. Doesn't matter. It's okay.
What about healing others?
That's okay.
And that's also predestined, so we're going to heal others.
Well, look at it as a profession. If your profession is the others, that's what you do. It's like being an accountant.
Only a lot more rare.
Yeah. It's a human profession.
Jorge is a healer in a way.
Yeah, yes.
His position.
We do whatever we have to do.
But is there other ways? There are other ways of healing, aren't there?
Through food, through fasting, through prayer, through meditation, finding a healer, all kinds of ways.
I mean, unconventional ways, such as some people seem to be able to heal with just their hands.
Yeah.
Yes. All things are possible.
But wouldn't the thing to remember be again that is happening within the grand illusion?
Oh, yes.
Even if it's on the astral plane or whatever, all those levels are part of Maya.
Yes.
The question is, what do you do once you heal?
Mm-hmm.
And what?
Then you get sick again.
Or not. I mean, it depends on your karma, I guess.
The ultimate sense, it doesn't matter what we do or don't do.
That's right. That's right.
We can do whatever we want to.
Mm-hmm.
Our reservations we may have about certain actions, I guess, also is in the script.
Yes.
Or our enthusiasm, we have to do some other things also in the script. That Robert.
True. I know certain people with some diseases who go spend their life traveling the world trying to heal themselves, where they could be wasting their time and using their time properly or trying to find themselves.
What about things like astral projection? What is that? I mean, is that what you experience? Or, yeah.
That's part of the psychic realms.
Which are also part of Maya. There's another level. Slightly different from the earth plane. You know?
And the Upanishads, it states, if you get caught in the Upanishads, it states, then if you get caught up in the psychic level, you can be caught for thousands of incarnations, going round and round, on psychic realms.
Isn't that perhaps due to the fact that some people think that that's the end of, the end goal?
A lot of people do, yeah.
Be psychically gifted or be able to astrally project. They see that as an end rather than just another level of illusion.
It's like another body. You travel in your physical body, you can travel in your astral body. It's a subtler plane, but it's just as material in one sense. It's subtler. It's hard to.
And probably without knowing, we have shared a great deal of these other levels of experience.
Could be, yes.
In, we are not aware now.
Mm-hmm. True. As you advance spiritually, a lot of psychic levels open up for you. But you're supposed to go beyond it and not get caught up there.